clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Today I'm joined at Fir Park by Grant Russell, head of media at Motherwell Football Club. How's it going, mate?
Good. Thanks for having me back on again. It's a pleasure. I thought you might be bored of me after last time because I spoke for about 5 hours last time, so you've enough content.
I'll try and make it 4 hours today. About a year since we last had you on.
Is that, yeah.
Another busy year with your first full season at the club.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on that?
Oh, goodness me. I've never stopped to reflect, so you're putting me on the spot. It was a fantastic year, like as we know, kind of on the pitch, a season of two halves, and certainly from our perspective and try to cover it in media terms, you know, all the kind of challenges it throws up and trying to tell the story in the best way possible with all the different factors going on. But then obviously when things turned in February, in particular with the change of style and the emergence of young talent, then suddenly you're rubbing your hands when the fans are singing about young players coming through, and you can then turn that into something positive as well when David Turnbull's rattling in goals and you can put up goal clips galore. It's nice to be able to do that kind of thing. But for me personally, it's been an exceptionally quick year. I mean, I can't even, it's just all a blur. And it's been trying, the start of the season, the start of 2018-19 was, from our perspective, let's keep going with what we're doing, let's see what works, let's just try and tell the stories and see where we can get to. Then we got to about March time and we had this kind of deliberate idea that we're going to press pause. I don't know how noticeable it was, but we were almost kind of going through the motions because we had decided at that point we wanted to try and rip everything up and start again and take a view on, is what we're doing right? And it was multi-layered, and I'm sure we'll get into it. So that's actually been a big part of the last 4 or 5 months, and actually slightly longer for me because I was always kind of thinking for over a long period of time of, okay, how can we change things up? How can we make it a better experience for all?
Yeah, and obviously in football, the players will go off for a few weeks at the end of the season, but I wouldn't imagine it was the same case for yourself.
I got 10 days away. We got 10 days away. Decided to,
it's better than I expected.
Yeah, but you're always on the phone. I'm pretty sure it was last summer when I went off to Rome in Istanbul, and we were sitting in Rome, Fiumicino Airport, with Alan Burrows on the phone, and I think we were announcing Mark Gillespie. And I'm sitting, if you can picture the scene, I'm sitting in a cafe in Rome Airport, and I'm pressing the button with Alan on the phone, I'm pressing the button on, and we're delayed to announce Mark Gillespie, and that's the kind of, that's what holidays are like in this game. But look, I mean, I'm not, this is not a sob story, I absolutely love it, and even though sitting on holiday over the summer there, if I went a morning without knowing what was going on back here or trying to come up with things, I just couldn't do it. I absolutely couldn't do it. I'm that kind of guy. I have to be kind of tuned in on some level at every point.
And in regards to the team that you have, Laura coming in, yeah. Lewis moving on to the SFA.
Yes.
First of all, I think Lewis was a great guy from my experiences with him. He obviously did a fantastic job here, continues to
Getting on well there. Yeah. Lewis has been doing the commentary for us still as well, and it's great to still have him around. A big character around the team and around the club, and we were really, really sad to see him go. He brought so much to the team in terms of ideas, the enthusiasm, that energy around the place as well. But it's inevitable that when the Scottish FA come chapping on your door, and I think it was kind of testament to how well he'd done here that he was able to get, which is a really big job to get at the SFA, and he's doing great there. And thankfully for us, we're in touch with him every day, obviously, still as well as friends, and he's involved still with the club in some form. So it's great to still have him around. And yeah, you mentioned Laura. A real coup for us to be able to get her into our team. Obviously, she's working with Copa 90 down in London. For those who don't know, they are kind of, they make videos based on football fan culture. so they don't do what's going on in the pitch. They'll tell the stories of the kind of things Laura did. Like last year in the World Cup, she was over in Croatia, in with the ultras in the square in the middle of Zagreb, I think it was, like telling that story of how they were kind of shaking up the World Cup and all these kind of different things. And a vastly, vastly experienced producer and all-rounder, and the opportunity came up to get her in. Everything just kind of worked out nice timing-wise, and I hope folk are seeing already the kind of the fruits of her labour and all the different things we're doing and the different ideas she's been able to bring, because it's not often you're able to pick up someone with that experience to come and work with.
And that's quite fantastic, isn't it? You lose someone, like Lewis, who has cut his teeth at Motherwell, but done such a fantastic job, and be able to replace him with someone.
Doesn't happen very often. Because I think normally, I mean, being candid and realistic, and normally if you're working in our team in that kind of third job, so you've got me and Ali who've been in the industry or been in this club for quite some time, but that third job will tend to be someone who's maybe just out of university, who's looking to cut their teeth, like you say, who will spend a few years with us, get great experience and move on. That's the reality of it.
Like the playing side, doesn't it?
It actually reflects it in many ways, and we shouldn't be ashamed of that, actually. I don't know why I'm being quite mildly cagey about it. That is the way it is, because that's just the way the business is. As all supporters and owners of this club, we know what the model is, and it does permeate through the whole business. So, yeah, that's normally what it is, but... like I say, the chance to bring Laura in for however long we have her was something different. When Laura moves on, then I doubt we'll be so lucky to be able to find someone with her experience who'd be willing to take Lewis's money.
Start of the summer, and it always begins with the season ticket campaign.
Yes.
Last year it was one that really kind of pulled at the heartstrings.
Fuel the fire.
Yeah. And we moved on to the kind of what if.
Yes.
This year.
Yeah.
Firstly, how did that idea come about, and how did you then kind of progress that onwards?
How did that idea come about? Oh goodness me! I have a very vivid memory, and I don't have many vivid memories in this place because it normally blurs, like I say. But of sitting with our whiteboard in the room, and I think it was me and Ali one night, and maybe Alan had been involved as well, and it got to the stage of, because last year was so clear, was, you know, you had a team who got to two cup finals, who it was like, well, it's so obvious what we're going to do next season, we're going to try and build on that, so fuel the fire was the message, easy campaign for us to kind of dream up. This one, it was kind of like, okay, the team's still doing well, we're punching well above our weight, the way the things have turned around the second half of the season is hugely positive again, but it's like, okay, it's like, I didn't want us to do a marketing campaign that was gimmicky, that was inauthentic. It had to be something that was genuine, that actually made people think, because I think sometimes we had such a huge season ticket bounce last year, and we have to go, well, we don't fully understand the reasons why it was so high. Probably the easier one is it was two cup finals. So it's like, okay, if we are going to experience some sort of drop off, or people are maybe questioning whether they want to renew their season tickets, if they can afford to renew their season tickets. So, okay, well, how can we appeal to people on that genuine level? And for us, it was about telling the stories of all the different kind of, we end up writing up different things on the board. It was like the passion, the faith, the youth, ownership, I don't know what other ones were, but in any case, it was like, okay, well, let's tell those stories, and we wanted it to be genuine. It wasn't really, okay, it's a marketing campaign, it is a sales pitch to be able to say to you guys, please renew your season tickets, but in a sense as well, it's like, nah, we actually just want to tell these stories, and if you buy a season ticket, then great, but if you don't, then we hope you enjoyed the story. So we had Andy Patterson telling us a story, or I think he came under the faith banner of telling us what it's like with Jack Reid. That was habit, because he'd sat in the same seat for so many years. We got the young boys to sit down and tell us about what it meant to come through the youth academy at Motherwell, with Derek Watson on, talking about everything they're trying to do over in their section as well. So it was trying to come up with those ideas that reminded you what it is to be a Motherwell fan, just in case you were wavering slightly.
Yeah, and it's obviously a hugely significant thing being a season ticket holder, particularly with a fan-owned club.
Yeah.
It's that sense of belonging, that sense of playing your part every season. You're going to be there through thick and thin. And I know that's maybe harping back to a previous campaign, but that message comes across loud and clear from the season ticket videos this year.
It's a huge financial commitment to purchase a season ticket, and especially in the world we kind of live in these days, you're maybe more used as well to, if you've got Sky or Netflix or BT, you pay monthly subscriptions. So, but the way football is, it's again unashamed. The reason you buy season tickets, we need money in the door. I mean, everyone knows that. So we are asking for a big financial commitment, and look, there will be a percentage of people who buy season tickets come hell or high water, and that's great, that's absolutely fantastic, and we're so indebted to the people that do. But there are also members, like parts of our fan base who are like, well, I don't know if I can afford that, or there'll be even people in the fan base who say, well, I just don't know this year because I've got the two kids, and I don't know if they want to go along all the time at the weekend. So it's like the whole part of the campaign was just to go, just remember why you're a Motherwell fan. Graham Keyes as well, talk about was the family side of things as well. That was the one I missed out from the list. And Marcus Sheeran on the ownership side of things, just so I try to tick every box. If I've forgotten someone after that, then
you can
dub me in after, right? But it was the idea of trying to say, just if you're not too sure, just remember why you're a Motherwell fan. But at the same time, we're completely mindful that it's such a big commitment, and we're forever, forever grateful.
And it seems from Alan Burrows on Twitter and the sales are shaping up very well year on year.
And no spoilers yet, but we're on similar lines to last year, is what I'll say at the moment.
Which certainly sounds positive.
Which is hugely positive. Hugely, hugely positive. And we've still got a bit to go. But I think and not speaking out of turn because this isn't massively my department, but I think I could probably speak for the club and say that for us, our season ticket sales to be on a very, very similar track on this day this year, coming off the back of what we were coming off the back of last year, is hugely positive. And I'd like to think it lends itself to the things the club are doing and the direction we're headed in, that people are truly believing and buying into. I'd like to think that, because it's very easy to buy a season ticket off the back of two cup finals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's easier. But to then come in and go, okay, well, what's this season going to be like? There's a fair bit of change. There's boys potentially leaving or did leave. That little bit of uncertainty. So to still be on that similar track is a huge, huge positive for the club.
It is a dear time for fans as well, isn't it? You think even, I know it's £12 and £6, but it's still, for fans that go to all four Betfred games, you're an additional £50 before a ball's been kicked in the league. So the dedication of the fans is... It's truly remarkable, isn't it? You look at the crowd at Dumbarton on Tuesday night. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we thought it was going to be a big crowd, but to see nearly 1,200 people make it to Dumbarton, I know it was a nice night and all, but it's still a bit of a hike, and it was absolutely fantastic seeing it. Really did lift the players. I mean, I know that can be the kind of a cliche in football terms, but when they come out and see it, a couple of them were remarking afterwards, going, did we have that whole stand? That was ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's a great thing. But you say, like, the financial commitment, I mean, this time of year, you've got holidays, you've got kids, the kids are off school, and you've got to pay for, you've got to keep them entertained. You're thinking about buying school uniforms again, you're doing a multitude of different things if that's the kind of bracket you fall into. So it's an expensive time of year, so to then pay that season ticket money, fantastic.
And then following on the season, the summer starts with what can only be described as a saga regarding David Turnbull's future, and it was something that went on for quite a few weeks. Very rarely to go on here and talk about the club getting criticism, but there was murmurs of discontent about the way it was handled and the way it was communicated. It was clearly a very difficult time. There was information coming out and things would change out with anyone's control.
Yep.
It must have been a fairly stressful scenario in the way it played out.
Look, the biggest stress would be for David. You know, a young man who's come in and done fantastically well, Motherwell fan through and through, and suddenly he's thrown into this situation which would have been stressful enough, and then suddenly the situation develops into something hugely negative for him. And, you know, all big part of my thoughts along the way were, well, how's David handling this? But if we want to talk from a communications point of view on it, and we could probably talk through it chronologically. I mean, the first thing we did was say we've accepted a bid from Celtic, and the kind of consideration there was, I think the only criticism we've had for communicating it at that point is from Celtic fans or non-Motherwell fans saying that it's a hugely unusual step. Okay, it might be for a club to come out so publicly and say we have accepted a bid, normally it's always done through back channels and so on. It's like, no, we are a fan-owned club. So that's the first consideration. You have to tell our owners we have accepted a bid.
I assume part of the rationale there is you don't want it in the back page of a Daily Record or online first.
Massively important. I don't want you as a supporter to be, like you say, reading the back page of the Record and then come to us and going, oh, any chance? You know, it's like, no, we want to tell you first. We consider the utmost importance to be the ones that are telling our supporters and our owners the news first. So any criticism we got for that, I mean, it's water off a duck's back. We thought it was important to them. We also thought it was important to not justify it to supporters, because we know there would be people who would go, really? Without delving into too much what I mean. But it would have been a transformational transfer fee for this club, and so we were keen to let people know that. Go, okay, you might not be too happy with that, this might be happening, but cold light of day, when we sit down, that figure can do things. And we hope that when the dust is settled, that you can realise that, and that's what we're going to say to you. We don't want to. We could have put up a one-line statement. We've accepted a bid for David Turnbull from Celtic. How'd you like that? We didn't. You know, it was very important for us to say, if this happens, this is what we believe the effect it can have on the club. What played out next was so unfortunate for all parties, particularly David. But the positive that comes out of it is that he's now going to have an injury fix that he didn't know he had. And we'll see him back in Claret and Amber, which is hugely positive for everyone. And what happens next happens, but that's life, I guess, and we kind of move on from it. But I like to think that the way that we kind of handled it, yeah, I know there was a lot of uncertainty along the way, but we have to be considerate to a young man's health, ultimately, at the end of the day. And if anyone thought, oh, how did we not know that? Why was that not communicated? Well, actually, and I'm going to sound like a hypocrite here when I say, oh, there were some things we thought you absolutely needed to know. Well, sometimes there's some things you just don't need to know in that moment in time, and you have to consider that it's a real person that's involved, and we will communicate things to you when we can and in depth as we can, and I hope that's enough.
Yeah, and the conspiracy theories, any story in football, there will be someone that comes up with a weird and wonderful
every day, yeah.
kind of take on it, a hot take, as we like to refer to it as. Then you can get the abuse that comes with the likes of Twitter and Facebook, yes, and stuff like that. You said water off a duck's back, but is it hard to switch off when Christ, what influence do you have in David Turnbull moving to Celtic?
None.
I imagine very little, but they still manage to, people can voice criticism over your part in it and everything else. That must be slightly difficult to switch off from.
From my previous life at STV, it would be a lot of the stuff I'd be dealing in would be Rangers and Celtic supporters, mainly Rangers financial dealings, which both fans had a massive investment in, both clubs and still do. Or I mean, it could be anything. And a big part of my job would actually be sitting on social media and answering their questions. I mean, I say answering questions, about 20% were questions and 80% were foul-mouth rants or accusations or goodness knows what. I don't know, maybe I just developed a thick skin over time, and it actually helps. And then coming to this job, it's like, we'll see what anyone outside of our support says. I honestly don't care. I'll just mute them, or I'll answer them, or maybe sometimes rise to debate. But see if a Motherwell fan comes to me and says, that video you're doing, it's just bloody not good enough. Why are you doing it like that? I'm not going to, I'm suddenly not sitting rigid and back up, can't believe you're saying that out there. No, I'll go, no, okay. I'll, your opinion genuinely matters. I'll sit with you and I'll explain it to you. And that's the experience of the years on social media. I can actually hit that kind of sanguine kind of attitude. I go, no, okay, let's talk. And I am that kind of person. It's like, I think a few folk have maybe seen it over the summer that I've suddenly joined Well Fans too, and I've suddenly joined Pye and Bovril, and I'm on Steelman Online as well. And I'm very, I've got open DMs on Twitter. My email address is out there. Like, if you find my phone number as well, or come through the office and phone me as well, I'll talk, because I think it's very important for us to keep people in the loop of what we're doing. if you want to have a nibble, you want to have a criticism, look, you're perfectly entitled to it. But I'll explain to you what we're thinking, how we're trying to do that, and hopefully the outcome you get from that is satisfactory, or at least someone's explained it to you. And I was so, so happy to do that. I'd never hide in the cupboard and think, oh no, bad person said something negative online.
It is quite a refreshing change to that, from the kind of volatile nature of social media. Maybe I'm slightly idealistic, because it does seem to get heated very quickly. I think it's the first time a couple of days ago that I'd actually seen you kind of eventually replying to someone, and you just kind of got the sense that I could, it's like so long someone could talk guff without me replying.
Well, it wasn't that. I was like, we just never really had it up until that stage where people were. I think it's because we've made so many changes in our digital output this summer in particular that there's never.
I was meeting the Celtic support.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Right. what in particular? Like, oh, yeah, I did reply. I don't know. Sometimes just something goes off in the mind. You think, no, I need to defend us here. I think that's important, because I get enough of it where it's just like, oh, I'm not going to give you the time of day. What's the point? You don't matter to me as a, you know, you're not a Millwall fan and you're just being nasty.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'll say something. But sometimes if I reply to other people, it will just be. I actually feel like I need to say something here, not to defend myself, but actually to defend Motherwell, or just because sometimes you need to put in your place.
Absolutely.
Because people say things online that they think they can just say anything.
Behind a picture of someone else or an egg.
And I'm like, I'm the kind of guy who's just like, no, I'm going to tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. See if you don't like it, then well, at least I've told you that is the truth. That is how it is. If you still want to go on as saying that, no, it's not that, I don't believe you, no, it's up to you, but I've come on and I've told you, so
yeah,
you deal with that how you see fit.
We've got someone making his way through the South Stand singing songs at this moment in time.
One of the young players. Well, they've caught the bug at least.
Well, talk about the introduction to the new players at the club over the summer, and there has been a move away from the traditional close-up interview, quite often just after putting pen to paper. Mm-hmm. Cards on the table, I found them quite awkward. I think you can only
ask... The old way, yeah.
It's the same questions you can ask. How does it feel to be a Motherwell player? What drew you to the club? What's your hopes? And when you've not seen a player in action, you don't really know what you're getting, and that interview doesn't tell you very much.
Oh, you're right. What I will say from the outset is that, like I said, I touched on earlier, back in March, we sat down and we questioned everything about actually how the club portrays itself, like what the perceptions of the club are, what the club stands for. So we kind of did that exercise, and then off building on top of that, really, okay, what stuff do we put on our social media channels and our website and such like. One of the big things was, I said to the guys, forget everything you've ever known. Just imagine you were redesigning how a football club does digital media from scratch. What would it entail? And that took months and months and months of trying to think through. And what we've done this summer is kind of the first version of, here's what we think it should be. It's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think we've already sat down and on new signings, I would say, before I actually answer your question, what I would say is, maybe we could be hearing from new signings slightly quicker. I think there's still boys even that are in the door now that there's still a bit of a mystery, and I get that. But what the important thing for us, so we're kind of quite heavily data focused. It's not the be all and end all, but we can track absolutely everything that goes out on our social media channels and see how many people have seen it, how many people have then liked or retweeted it or shared it. And we use a big part of that in our decision making. And it's not the be all and end all, because there are some things we will do regardless. I mean, it's very important for our club still to be an information service and for us to tell you if we have to come on and tell you that turnstiles 5 and 6 are going to be closed. Well, I'm not expecting 500 likes on that, but it's very important for us to be able to tell you. So it's kind of two track in that sense. But when we have such a small team with only three of us, churning out the volume and quality of content that teams of 10 people don't put out, the most important thing for us is, how can we give the best offering of Motherwell Football Club to supporters with the resources we have? So we have to be kind of smart. We have to go see that thing we've done for 5 years. alright, a lot of people might watch it, but they're not getting anything out of it. So that touches on what you're saying about the player interview. Someone comes in the door, signs paper, alright, here's your photo, right, comes in, welcome to my little football club, how does it feel to be here? What do you think they're going to say? In all honesty, and okay, I get it's nice to hear from people, and I think that's maybe the thing we'll learn from this summer is, okay, we need to hear from them at some point, but it needs to be in that kind of less kind of awkward way of doing things. And we've changed our interview style now, in that it used to be, it looked like a television interview where a player would be talking to me, and you'd hear me asking the questions, and he'd talk to me, and they're looking off camera. It's like, well, actually, that's quite impersonal. What we've tried to do this summer now is instead is get a player to look directly at the camera, so they're actually directly looking at you, and they're talking to you, and they're kind of, they're telling their story. The questions are removed, it's shorter, it's more accessible, it's a bit more fast paced, it's a bit more insightful. Because if you put for the best will in the world, if you put a footballer down in front of a camera and ask them on the spot, and it's like, I can't edit this, you're gonna have to talk for 5 minutes, it's awkward. It descends into cliche, it descends into pregnant pauses, it descends into just something not very entertaining or good for the viewer or the player itself. It's like, so we've actually sat down with that interview style and go, well, we're going to chop this up, so relax, you know. It's like, you talk a bit more, or you say that bit there and say that bit there, and we'll mash the two together. And I just think it's a better experience all around, because I actually think you find out more about the player. And the player's personality, they're able to relax into it and be more like themselves. I'd say the perfect example is Jermaine Hilton. In his interview he did, he actually came across as the Jermaine that we know and see around the place every day. But more than a bit, if I put him down in front of a camera for 5 minutes, he would go into his shell. So you have to ask yourself as a supporter, what do you really want to see? Do you want to see just someone talking for talking's sake? And you might go, he's a shy boy, isn't he? I don't know what we're going to get. Or do you actually want to see the real person? And look, nothing's perfect so far. We're still trying to learn how to do things. But I think if you try to tick that box over the summer, I think we've done relatively well in trying to bring out the player personalities more. I hope. Maybe people will tell me differently.
It's an additional challenge, the fact that a lot of guys that are coming in, fans in Scotland and fans of Motherwell possibly won't know very much about these guys. Yeah, yeah. So you've got to kind of build up a picture and a profile of the guys. But that can be very difficult when you and the guys in the media team haven't actually seen them play as well.
Exactly. But that is precisely what we're trying to do, and we will do over the coming months, is of every player, quite intentionally build up a profile of them. Like, we want to be able to, control's the wrong word, but we want to be able to develop the person and the player that, so then you can see them. And that might sound quite sanitised and controlled, but actually it's controlled in a good sense. Because if we get to know Devante Cole and get to know the personality and what and get to see like his player, and then tell his story, you will, as a fan, in time, once we've got through everyone, understand them better and feel closer to them, in my opinion, because we'll tell more interesting stories, you'll get to see them a lot more relaxed and a much more of a natural habitat, and then what happens on the pitch happens on the pitch. So it is an intentional strategy from us to actually, for every single player, to try and bring out that true personality, so that you are actually able to feel closer to them. And then if you bump in the street or stuff like that, you've got something to talk to them about, or if you're just watching them from afar on social media, that you truly understand. I think Charles Dunn is a perfect example, actually. That Charles, with the best will in the world, if he's sitting down in front of a camera, is a little bit nervous, and I'm not trying to do him a disservice here, but is a different guy to the one that's on his Instagram stories. I mean, that is absolute night and day. If you give him put a phone in his hand, he's suddenly in a field chasing horses. You know, and that's Charles Dunn. That is the personality. I'm betraying him here by giving away his real name. You know, it's not a persona. It's not a fake. That's the real Charles Dunn. And actually, you're seeing an unreal Charles Dunn when we're sitting down in front of a camera. That's not him.
Yeah.
He is this larger-than-life character, making the noises and doing the daft things. And it's like, okay, as a supporter, it's much more beneficial if you get to know the real one rather than this stiff in front of a camera. I don't really know. I'm not very comfortable with this. You have to ask yourself as a fan which one would I rather know. And I'm wondering about everyone will say, the horse whispering Charles Dunn is the person they'd be most likely to spend time with.
Yeah, certainly the one I prefer, I must say. I feel like I'm kind of putting you on the spot a few times here, but we'll move on to match day coverage.
Yes.
And that's something, again, that has been brought up quite a lot. And we'll start with the pre-match stuff and the press conferences. There's been a shift away from the recording of the press conference itself to a more one-on-one with a player and the manager as well. What's the thoughts behind that? There's a few kind of Twitter replies when I mentioned you were coming on. I said they feel it's a bit more sanitised.
Oh, I read them, don't you worry.
Well, this is your chance to fight back.
No, look, I actually, it was last season we moved away from doing the press conferences. What we did, we thought that press conferences as a whole weren't massively achieving what we thought the fans would want. So what we did, we then took the player out and the manager out and we interviewed them one-on-one ourselves. And actually, when we reflected on the summer, it was like, actually, even that feels a bit too sanitised and not very insightful. So actually, what we've gone back to this season is we are now filming the manager's press conference and we're clipping it up. Because what we got from the numbers, but also talking and listening to people, was, well, press conference is something I don't normally get to see. I find that a little bit interesting. Even at the numbers, like people who were actually viewing it, I mean, I think if you were looking at it in a very, very cynical sense, if my job was just data, no one's watching that, bin, put it in the bin, press conferences would be top of the list. But no, actually, we thought about it ourselves as supporters of football and what people were saying to us too, and said, oh, okay, actually, is there a way we can tick the press conference box and so the people that do want to get that insight can get it, and then people who don't care about it continue to not care about it. So actually, this season, we've been filming the manager's press conference and just taking the best bits from it and putting that out on Twitter. But then also been doing a longer version for Facebook and YouTube, but you don't hear the questions. But we've been subtitling it as well, so that if you just arrive at it, you don't even need to put the sound on. You can see it because, you know, when you're scrolling down your mobile feeds.
Yeah.
I very rarely put the sound on videos, actually.
It tends to come on when I'm on a train or something.
Yeah,
like
which
that is
quite embarrassing.
Last one.
Yeah. So we're still trying to figure out exactly how best to do that, but we're opening up the press conversation. I think I can't remember the person's name on Twitter, so apologies, but I saw the one where it was like, oh, I want to be able to hear the questions and why can't I see the full thing. I was like, no, I understand where you're coming from, but I'm not trying to be offensive, so please don't take it like this, because like you're a very, very small minority from what we've seen. So but we're not saying that what you're saying is not appropriate. So what we've done is try to find the halfway house of, there's three people in the team, we can only do so much. The other stuff we're doing instead of press conferences and stuff like that is doing really, really, really well in terms of the numbers we're getting and the feedback we're getting. But we still hear you, we still see that we can still see the value and you getting that access. So we've tried to find the best possible way to balance everything up. So the YouTube version of that press conference now is 3-4 minutes of the best answers editorial that we think you would want to hear and get the insight. We've tried to make that the balancing act, but I think you're getting from this that everything's a balancing act, and I'd love to have 20 people and we could satisfy every individual person's demands and wishes for what we do, but we have to be smart while also trying to help. But look, we take all feedback always. I mean, I did see that, and I've seen it a few times over the last 12 months of people saying, oh, I want to see the press conferences, but it is a very small number of people, and I'm not saying that what you're asking for is worthless or should be disregarded. Quite the opposite. We're always listening. We're always going, okay, well, is there a way we can help that? Even if it's one person, is there a way that we can satisfy what they're looking for without sacrificing the things that the majority of people are enjoying? So it's always a balancing up. We're always trying to find a way. We're never closed off. I didn't read that and go, oh, press conferences, you kidding me on? No, don't be daft, no one watches them. We've actually tried to find a way to help and satisfy everybody.
It's funny you should say that, because I actually had, obviously, a hard balancing act.
Well, that's that ticked off then.
The thing is, I completely see why it is, though, because from being on the other side and covering press conferences,
they're dull sometimes.
And it's also, there's an element of everyone lazing to pick the line from the press conference.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll read about it in 7 or 8 different publications the following day.
Yeah.
So if you were rehashing the same thing, there's a danger that the finger would be pointed at you and saying, well, we already knew this.
Actually, so we're tell some we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose that's the kind of the challenge you face.
Of course it is, but then sometimes maybe only the press association from the broadcast side of things will come to our press conference. It happens very, very rarely, but sometimes it's like, okay, well, you will read it in places, but maybe you're only going to get one line from it. So what I've tried to, what we've tried to do is like, okay, well, there's going to be some things the press won't tell you in the press conference because they'll probably state one thing or two things. So it's like, well, there's four things. Here you go, have them, and you get, so you're getting that insight, you're getting to see the press conference, and you're getting to find out a little bit more than what you might read in the press. But at the same time, you're not seeing the whole thing because it's just really difficult for us to do. And press conferences can become quite monotonous. I know some people like them. Ask me personally, I would never watch one, but I can't let my personal feelings judge it too much.
I suppose you're having 38 for league games plus cup games.
I'm forgetting, I see them all anyway because I'm in there.
In addition to that, so that's certainly not a novelty.
Trust me, guys, I see them all. I'm not that interested.
but again, there's only so much that can be said at these things as well.
Yeah, it can become cliche central again, like I say. Yeah. I know it's since people find them insightful. So what we are trying to do is, okay, let us try and give you something insightful in a different way. And if we're not quite doing that yet, then tell us. And because we're still trying to find the ways to... I mean, like, one of the big things when we went through pre-season was you didn't hear from the manager after games. And it was a minority again, but it was a cacophony of a minority. We're like, where's the manager? Why am I not hearing from the manager? It's like, we were just kind of like, it's pre-season. It's like, there's always so much you can say after we've ran about for 90 minutes. It's like, do you really, really, really want to hear from him after we've scored seven against Gretna? So we kind of took that view of, no, you should hear from the manager after every competitive game because it's important. But at that point, it was like, guys, trust us, it's just not worth it. Please just trust us. And again, it was that kind of small number as well. And I hope I'll take people's feedback on it after listening to this as well, what they thought. But we're always just trying to learn. It's like no one in those four walls in that tiny office down there thinks they have the answers to everything. We think we're doing some good things differently, but we're always adapting. There's been things we've picked off the shelf already over the summer and gone, don't quite like that, tweak that, get rid of that. Oh, and then every day someone's coming up with a new idea. I mean, I'll maybe let you take a picture of it so you can show people when we go back down to the office, but it's like our wall is plastered in ideas from around the world of all the things people have done and go, okay, I like that idea, how can we apply that?
Earlier on, and was kind of curious as to what that was. Yeah,
we've got a massive whiteboard in the office now and it'll show you the scale of everything we're doing. It's like every day, I mean, it demands it. I don't know if people will care or appreciate this, but there are three of us and the demands that get put on Ali and Laura in particular to work, and I don't know how I'm going to come across here, but I'll say it, who work 6 day weeks, who work a lot of hours, and they're getting pushed so hard to create content for fans that I hope everyone enjoys. And I'm not saying you should be grateful because they're knocking their pans in. It's not that at all, but maybe people don't realise actually how small a team it is and just how much actually goes into everything they do. I know absolutely everyone will be appreciative, but it's to give that perspective of we do so much considering the amount of people we have. So, and we need to be smart and go, well, I can't have them here from 6 in the morning till midnight. There has to come a point.
Although
where
they often are.
Yeah, sometimes they are, yeah. There has to come a point where they have to have lives as well. And we're actually still trying to find that balance. I think the guys have worked exceptionally hard over the summer and maybe just sometimes need a day off as well. But no, I know people that... I know everyone will appreciate that everything we do is... Everyone works so hard and we feel that we don't have the answers to everything and we're constantly adapting. We constantly want people to tell us what they think. We really do, you know, it's important.
And they have done in terms of the audio coverage this season. It has been something that people have been used to for, I think, possibly about 7 or 8 years now. It's been a free service. I believe it's licensing issues that have changed there. Yep. And that puts it onto the subscription-based service. What is the difficulties associated with announcing that, particularly when people have, through habit, been used to, if they miss a game, they can receive coverage from a Motherwell slant as well for 90 minutes, and now that's almost withdrawn from under their feet.
I really, really understand where everyone's coming from, and it's one of those things, because you get so used to something for so many years. It's a great service for the several hundred people who listen in the Mixlr, especially at away games every week. I can completely sympathise with suddenly that's taken away. Unfortunately, the way that the SPFL, not to bore too much on the regulations, if you like, but the way it is, you're just not allowed to do it. So we then had a quandary at that stage of, okay, well, can't do it. I mean, what are our options here? We can do it and risk it, but is that really the responsible thing to do? And would Alan Burrows be pleasing me when suddenly a 10 grand fine comes in from the SPFL or whatever it would be for breaching the agreement? So there was that kind of quandary. So that was the unfortunate thing. So the hands were tied straight away. So it then came to that point of, well, the rule is it has to be paywalled. So what were our options at that point? Because it's not the easiest thing to get out there. I know technology's fantastic now. We could be doing this live right now, frankly, if we wanted to, through 4G or Wi-Fi.
Too many mistakes for that.
But like, we have challenges when we go to certain grounds as well, that the connectivity, it's actually quite a difficult thing for us to do, to get that audio out. So we essentially had to rely on our third party at that stage to go, okay, if we're going to paywall this as well, which, because the technology we've tried to been able to paywall it as well, is takes time to operate. And on a match day in particular, it's maybe something we could have done, but we're so stretched on match days as it is to try and do what we do. It's like, well, if I'm having to go off and operate a paywall, we had to send it out of house, essentially, at that stage. So the company who did our live streaming last year were there to then be able to take on the audio service properly as well. And that was the easiest option for us. I mean, we did look around other places to say, well, is there another way of doing this? But their service is just so good for us, the way it works, and it's all an integrated platform, and there are several hundred people who pay to watch the live streams abroad every week as well. So it was that kind of consideration of, well, that's the best platform for it. And unfortunately, if now you do have to pay for it if you want to listen to it, well, at least it's on a platform that everyone's familiar with and we know works, although works most of the time. I know some people have said that they have trouble every now and then, and I'm always, please get in touch if for whatever reason something's not working for you, especially if it's something you've paid for. I understand the upset, I understand the pushback on it, saying, why can't I get the service anymore? Well, all I can say to that is, I'm sorry, we are sorry, our hands are tied. So at that stage, it's almost like, well, if you want to keep listening to the service, and I hope you do, would you consider paying £5.99 or £6 a month for it? And what I will say for that part, because it's more money, we're asking people to pay more money, and no one likes to put their hand in their pocket and pay more for something, especially when they've had it for free for so many years. What I will say for that is that a good chunk of that money and revenue, not profit, revenue from the £6 that comes in, comes straight to the club and is used by the club to pay for things. So it's not your money's not going to some faceless third party corporation. It's not going to in anyone's pocket other than the club that you support and own. So I think if you can try and think of it that way, you guys pay your season tickets, you pay your website, you pay for so much already, but if you want to use that service, please, I hope you will want to spend that money. I know, please be in the comfort that a good chunk of that money comes straight back into the club to help what we do. And look, there might be discussions to be had further down the line of, can we somehow subsidise it through the Welsh Society and bring the cost down? And I think we've just been caught in the hop very slightly with it. I like to be an organised guy. I'm that kind of, I can adapt to situations, and if something happens right now, I can go and do it. But I like to be strategic to plan things out. And with this audio thing, it was just kind of like, it's one of those things that happened. It was like, oh, we're just going to have to do this. You know, we've tried our best. So it's like, so look, again, we're open to conversation. Someone said to me on Well Fans 2, sorry, I can't remember your name because you emailed me as well. So apologies if you listened to this, but and suggested, is there any way we can maybe get this through the Well Society? So please, great idea. We'll speak. We'll try and figure something out over the coming months and see if we can bring the cost down as well, because we're not money grabbers. And I like to think that's actually borne out in what we do, because we've never asked for a penny for anything that we do online. And I can assure you, it's not the direction of travel we're headed in. In 3 months' time, it's not going to be like, oh, you like those manager interviews, do you? I have to pay for them as well. But some clubs do, by the way. I mean, a lot of clubs do. Rangers TV, Celtic TV, Kilmarnock, Aberdeen, even Hibs and Hearts. You know, the a lot of the stuff that you guys enjoy through social media channels, actually other clubs, fans of other clubs have to pay for it. And I can assure you, we will never, ever do that. The only thing we're ever going to actually to pay for as long as I am here, is to watch the games if you're abroad, or to listen to the games if you're at home. And the only reason I'm asking you to pay for those things is because we have to.
Yeah.
It's like, see if I could give them away for free. I would 100% do it. See if we could be putting goal clips. See, as soon as someone puts the ball in the net, if I could have that on Twitter and Instagram within 30 seconds, like they do in MLS, for example, in America, I'd do it. Mm-hmm. We want to make the Motherwell supporting experience as kind of rich as we possibly can. But these are the things we do with our hands tied. Everything else we do will always be free, I promise you. And hold me to this, because there's absolutely no reason or motivation or rationale or necessity for us to charge money for anything else. And it would go against everything we believe in and everything we try to work towards.
It's quite obvious from what you're saying there, there is a bit of frustration about the kind of policies in place from the higher ups and the kind of almost draconian nature of it, where while clubs, particularly Motherwell, are doing such fantastic work, dare I say the SPFL and the SFA don't evolve at quite the same pace. And that, I know there is obviously legality issues and broadcast contracts already in place, but it does feel like our game sits still. I was reading before I came out that from this season, Sky Sports will be showing goals on their YouTube channel of all the EPL games going forward. So people are worried about match of the day, and would this change their viewership? But everybody wants everything now, immediately. And you'll see what fantastic goals, Harry Kane's goal at the weekend from the halfway line. Premier Sports share that. It's gone viral within 10 minutes of the ball hitting the net.
Yep.
We have to wait till Sunday night.
Yep.
It's very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I think I've been quite outspoken in the past on the governing bodies and how they approach things, and I think I've mellowed quite a bit. But what I will say is, and I'll turn this into a positive, that as a game as a whole in Scotland, we have to have a unique selling point, and that unique selling point probably has to be we do things differently. And that's actually what we're trying to do here. It's like, see, if we keep repeating the same things over and over, you're going to get the same results over and over. And are you happy with those results? Because we're probably not. That probably applies on a football pitch as well.
You know,
so the watershed... No, well, it wasn't the watershed moment for me. The best thing that's happened over the last 12 months that actually made... I'm pretty sure I tweeted about this at the time and actually had a dig, was when Zlatan Ibrahimovic's debut for LA Galaxy against LAFC, and he scored that ridiculous goal, chipping the goalkeeper on his debut. Now, it's MLS, it's quite niche still, well, as much as it's growing, and I love it, everyone in our office loves it, by the way, as you were geeks. But that moment, if that Zlatan goal, the way the MLS operate is, and the clubs in MLS operate is, get that out right now, no matter what it is, but especially the big moments. Get that out right now, because that is going to explode. That is huge. Everyone in the world will absolutely feast on that. If David Turnbull did that on a Saturday at 3 o'clock, scored the most outrageous goal you have ever seen. if he did that, by the way, I'd probably be inclined to break every rule going. It's like, that needs to get out right now.
Well, it's a lot better you doing it than someone filming
From the stands, or on the telly. But that's what happens.
BBC Alba,
that's what happens.
We start getting that.
When we play Celtic here in a couple of weeks' time, if someone scores a win on the 90th minute, Motherwell fans watching that at home will have that on social media within 30 seconds. Meanwhile, we're sitting here on our hands. We know that amazing things happen, but we can't put it up till midnight. And it's like, really is that the, and look, there are so many considerations. Broadcast contracts are massive to Scottish football. They sustain Scottish football, like it or not. The money that comes in, whether we can argue to a blue in the face where we think the money's good enough, but that money is huge to every club outside of Celtic and Rangers. Without that money, where would we be? Because the sums involved are still so, so big. Mm. So we are still have to be exceptionally considerate to what the broadcasters want to do. But what we have to do with the broadcasters, and hopefully will do as we move towards the new contract period, is go, how can we... It's not me going, I hate you, let me show the goals. It's like, no, it's like, how can we promote Scottish football in the best way? And how can you get the most out of your broadcast contract? See, that money you're paying, see, not being able to show the goals or only showing the goals on Sky Sports News, are you really getting the best out of what you're paying your money for? Would it not be more beneficial if, when a full-time whistle goes, that goal can immediately be on every social media platform? Is that not promoting Scottish football better? Is that not you getting more value for money? And the quandary for broadcasters is like, well, no, because we need people to pay the subscription to come and see it on us. It comes down to monetizing social media channels. And it's like, well, we're not going to put it on Twitter for free. Why would we do that? Because then folk won't subscribe to Sky. And it's like, and I would actually argue back going, sure about that? Have you tried it? Have you tested it? It's that argument. It takes me back to that argument about the 3 p.m. blackout that we have in the UK. It's one of the few countries in the world now that it's like, you can't broadcast what's happening out there if you've got a game. But if you go to Germany, they have a thing you can sit in the pub and they will cut between every single game, and you can see every time a team's attacking at Bayern or Dortmund or Frankfurt, it cuts to the, and it's like, so, but our attendance is a problem in Germany? No. So, but I learned there are a million and one factors why attendances are good in Germany. It's like, my problem with everything that we have to do in this country is everyone goes, oh, that'll never work. No, we've always done it that way. No, that'll, if you start showing Motherwell games, everyone will just go to the pub and no one will come. And I'll go, well, any chance testing that theory? I know there's only so many things you can test, but they probably couldn't test that one, because if folk actually did go to the pub, we'd be in a very bad place. But you know, that's always, so to kind of circle back to where we were, I think that we need to try and find ways to get people attracted to Scottish football, especially younger audiences as well, which are going to be a massive challenge over the coming years. How can we get people hooked on everything that is great about the Scottish football? Is bloody brilliant. It is madcap. It has amazing moments. It has passionate crowds. We can't hide that away. We have to try and find a way to bring that to the forefront, and we're trying to do that here in the best way we can. But collectively, we need to have that discussion of how can we do that a bit more from using media.
The Twitter coverage of the game is something else that has come under scrutiny, and I keep on just firing these at you here.
No, but
that was something that has clearly been
the match updates. Yeah.
Quite significantly, and I have made mention of it at the start of last week, where you saw the Morton game, and even right down to the team sheets and the sub graphics and everything else, everything's so clean, so crisp, and it's evolved again from last season.
Yeah.
It's different graphics, it's just very, very sharp and right up there with the best, but the in-depth nature of the Twitter updates isn't there.
Yep.
In comparison to a few years back. People have been used to that, just like the free audio coverage, I guess. They have been used to being able to go on and get almost minute-by-minute updates. You've decided to move away from that. It's been replaced with kind of match pictures and such like. Again, it would be fantastic if you could put up
the goals,
scored
in
the...
Yeah.
But obviously that's not possible at this moment in time. The stuff's moving over to the website, I believe, in the near future. What was it, the thinking process behind that? And obviously there are people that are quite upset by the move away from Twitter.
I know, it's a real double dunt, isn't it? The audio and the Twitter. So I apologise.
On the same weekend.
goodness, didn't make it easy for ourselves. The Twitter updates has actually been a big part of our thinking for several months. And we looked at what those updates were achieving on Twitter first and foremost. Okay, how many people were looking at them? That was actually quite an important one, because we also looked at how many people were engaging with them, but how many folk are actually going to press like on Connor Motherwell sails over everyone and goes out for a goal kick? It's not a very likeable thing, so we couldn't be too wedded to that, although it is still part of our thinking. But we were like, well, how many people are actually sitting at 3 o'clock on a Saturday in front of their phones and following a game as it's happening. And we were able to look at that and go, it's not me. Mm-hmm. Still are people, and these people are important, but it's proportionally small. Small, small percentage. And also the way that Twitter works these days, algorithmically, that if, say, you didn't follow the game and you didn't go on your Twitter till 8 o'clock at night, now what we want you to see is Peter Hartley's on-pitch interview in the immediate aftermath saying, well, that, you know, talking about the game, you can see the sweat on him, he's still catching his breath. That's what we want you to see, because that is the closest thing that we can do that takes you to being at the game without being at the game in that time, because I can't show you the goals, can't do anything else. But if you go on Twitter at 7 o'clock, it's potluck whether you get... So it comes up, things you missed. Unless you click on a profile, of course, but the first thing you see on a feed, things you missed. It's potluck whether you get Peter Hartley's great, or you get Sherwin Seedorf's Oscar speech, or you get James Scott's delightful. It's complete dicing whether you get that, or you get 43 minutes on the clock, Jake Carroll hits a shot from long range, goes in for a goal kick. Now, what do we want you to see? What do you want to see when you come on Twitter? You want to see the good thing. You don't want to see that. So there's that balancing act of, well, if we knew that if we do so many intricate minute-by-minute updates, that the chances are you're going to get the rubbish thing when you come on. So there was that balancing act as well. And also from, there's someone drilling in here, hopefully. This is very important, stop drilling. I lost my train of thought now, but it was important for us then also to then look around and see, well, what's everyone else doing in the world? What are the clubs in England doing, Spain, Italy, France, America? How do they approach updates as well? And we could see they were doing more about what we're thinking now. And okay, well, why? What's they thinking? And we spoke to a few, you know, these clubs and go, well, why are you doing that? And they've actually come up with the same kind of outcomes that we are now. So I just think the platform, people don't change much, but the platforms do. And certainly 2-3 years ago, Twitter was the perfect place to be able to follow a game minute by minute. I get that. We just feel now it's not. We think the platform's changed. And I can get where people go, well, I've always done it like that. Why are you taking it away? It's like, okay, we're not taking it away. We're going to move it somewhere else. You'll actually get, hopefully get more intricate play-by-play on our website when it's up and running, hopefully very, very soon. So again, it takes us back. It's that balancing act again of, we want you to see the best stuff. I saw a few folk on a few forums going, oh, it's just, they're just chasing the likes. They're just Twitter's just a marketing platform for them now. I don't care about, you know, this thing. I said, well, no, it's not. We're actually trying to create the best thing for you to then arrive on as a Motherwell supporter. So that's the thinking behind it. And look, Queen of the South game, I'll completely cop this because I was doing it. We got it completely wrong. There was not enough. There were not enough updates. Especially that we didn't score in the first half. We didn't score in the first half, so it was like kick off, half time. And I was like, and if you're dipping in every 10-20 minutes or so into your Twitter feed, you'd be like, what is going on? What is happening in this match? Like, I get that. So like, we're still trying to find the balance, and it was the Queen of South game was different to the next game against Morton, to the game against Dumbarton. Constantly try to find the way. It's like, okay, how can we find the balance of what you're seeing from the match is still really good and really interesting, and you still feel part of it, but then also not stopping you getting the best experience.
So it's a process of trial and error, and yeah. I'm picking up the pace here because I'm worried that the drilling man's going to return in a minute. So I guess what you're saying though is that lessons have been learned from Queen of South, you move on to Morton
and we learn from Morton and we learn from the Dumbarton.
And constantly feedback is appreciated in regards to that.
Of course. Like, with a lot of the things we're doing this summer, like I said earlier on, it's like we're not sitting here in a position of we're right, you're wrong. It's like actually we don't know if we're right. We're trying. Mm-hmm. We felt the absolute need to do something different if we want to give supporters the best experience and make them feel connected to the club and the players, and to feel a sense of belonging in the town as well, which is the big thing we've done, is that it tells more stories about the people of Motherwell, because I think it's massively important, even though it's got nothing to do with the football club. So we feel like we're trying to, with every single thing we're doing, we felt it was so important to change, but we're adapting along the way. And it's like, I could probably tell at half time at Queen's, it's like, the balance isn't right here, but again, it's like, we'll just carry on and let's see what happens next game, see what happens the game after. We'll continue to evolve it, and we will get to a stage where never going to please everyone, but we'll get to a stage where everything's finely balanced, finely tuned, and you'll be able to get, if you want that, you'll get it somewhere. And also when you're on Twitter, you'll get, I mean, it's interesting though, because people use Facebook probably more than Twitter. I've never once heard anyone say, why do you not do the updates on Facebook? We never have. It's like, no one's ever asked that question, and that's because you're just not used, because we've never done it, you're just not used to it. And it's just because we have done that and we're just making a slight shift, I can see what people go, but you've always done it that way. And it's like, yeah, I know, but things change, platforms evolve, and it's like, I'm not binning it. It's not, we're not getting rid of it, we're just taking it somewhere else, because we think that's the best way for everyone to get the best experience.
And I've spent the last 20 minutes grilling you, so I think it's important.
Can I breathe
to say
here?
That.
I mean, is that?
Yeah, I'll hopefully during that he won't start drilling again. But one thing I absolutely loved was the manager in the dressing room after Queen of the South, and how unique is that as a fan getting to see that, and kind of that is so behind the scenes, it's incredible. He started to drill again.
We persist.
Yeah, so that is just a completely unique insight into the goings on behind the scenes. It's something that, as a fan, you're very unlikely to ever see.
Yeah, and that is the kind of things we want to do. I mean, I don't know if the manager will throttle me for saying this. Nah, he won't. He won't listen this long, I think. I'll take my chances. I sat down with Stephen over the summer and said, look, here's all the different things that were basically what I'm explaining to you now. And said, look, here's what we're trying to achieve, and one of the ideas we've got is we want to be more present in the areas of the club where you would maybe consider the inner sanctum, that, you know, nobody gets in there. I mean, day one when the boys came back, we were in the dressing room, you saw them high-fiving each other, saying hi to each other the first time. We had a microphone on the manager giving his, I mean, that was a speech to the players. Telling them, setting the stall out for the season, and that was massively kind of different as well. And what I will say, I sat down and explained it all, and he was like, oh, great. You know, it's like, we're going to have to work with each other as we go, because sometimes, you know, if we get beat, God forbid, 5-0, and I walk into the dressing room and you're standing there with a camera, which ain't going to happen. You know, but it's about us being smart and knowing that there are certain moments that we feel it's really important for the fan to see, and what, to Stephen Robinson's immense credit, understands it and is so on board with it, and was even at one stage making suggestions, you know, about how we could do things now. And that's what I will say for Stephen, if we can talk him up in this moment, is he's so much more than a football manager for this club. I mean, all the things he does that maybe go unseen, whether it's getting involved with the training ground, the, you know, how the academy shapes up for the next few years, what things are on the walls and corridors, how the media output portrays the club. He's so switched on at absolutely everything that goes on, to the extent then that at Queen of the South, anybody didn't warn him. We said, this might happen at some stage. Didn't tell him. Suddenly Ali's in the dressing room with a camera after the game. And most managers, I think, even after a good morale boost and win, would go, boy, get out of here.
Well, was it the case when he didn't re-emerge after 10 seconds that you knew it was safe to follow him in?
I mean, we left Ali to it, and it was like, it was almost like a fly on the wall. And look, these are, sorry, I realise I'm rambling a bit, but it's like, these are the insights we want to give you. We'll pick and choose them carefully, because actually, because someone said to me, or someone on the team said to me at the Morton games, we were planning out what we're going to do, or like, oh, who's going to be in the dressing room? I was like, nobody. So you can't do it every week, because it loses its, you know, loses its shine. It's like, if you're going to be the club who are in the dressing every week, it's like, it gets too repetitive and samey. You want to keep it on your toes. You know, we want to do it. That'll pop up. And look, we might shock you and we lose a game 4-0. And you're like, oh, I'm not going to be in the dressing room, are they? And on a Monday morning or Sunday morning, you hear the manager in the dressing room saying to the players, here's how we're going to recover from this. and that would be a massive shock factor. But that is the kind of things we want to try and get to, and we think it's important because we want to tell the story of what's going on in this club. We want you to feel closer to what's going on here, and nothing should be a massive inner sanctum. It's like you need to, you deserve and to see these things, to know what's being said to the players or how players are reacting, how people feel, because a lot of people can go away at 5 o'clock on a Saturday and go, oh, they don't care, they're not like he's no trying, and the manager, he doesn't again. It's like, all right, I understand it. And one of the big reasons you are thinking that is because you don't get to know and feel what they actually genuinely do feel like. So if we can kind of remove that layer and go, see that player you think's no trying, he's in tears in the dressing room. You know, I don't want that, because that's quite grim in a sense, and quite, but you know, it's that kind of, we want you to actually know how we react to things and what's going on behind the scenes, because we think it's so important as you as a supporter to then fully understand what we're doing as a club.
And that's, I keep on using the word evolve, but that's how the story of the match can evolve. And yeah, I think there was times where in the first half of the season it was almost fronting up because results weren't that great,
yeah,
and people are going, oh, for fuck's sake, why are you putting that out today?
I know, that was a challenge.
I think having that consistency in your content is quite important, and people are expecting to see it. So
I always used to laugh at, I was the same person, I can't remember the name, it was after maybe a third or fourth defeat, and it was like, don't you effing dare put out a story of the match at my lowest issue, and I'm sitting there chuckling to myself thinking, well, we are.
It's 11:30 on a Sunday night and I'm still working on it, so sure as hell I'm going to put it out.
You're right, it is important, you can't hide, we shouldn't hide. Well, you hit a bad run of results, well, what do you want to do? Do you just want to stop doing stuff? Actually, that's worse, because that makes it look like, oh, something's not right.
Yeah.
See, if we're just open all the time and you actually do get to fully understand, we're consistent, like you say, but then you can feel the players more and feel the manager more and feel the club more, then actually that helps everyone. You know, it maybe removes that cutthroat nature of, oh, get rid of the manager. He's not getting it. It's like, well, you don't know that, so how can I make you understand it a bit more? And you still have your opinion after, that's up to you.
Don't get me wrong, there was ones I didn't watch.
It got to
the difficult stage at points, but we came out at the other end, and we'll talk finally just about the season ahead. I appreciate that you've given up a lot of your time today.
No, I'm enjoying it.
The Barton game on Tuesday, yes. Another victory, another clean sheet, very long grass. The result was the most important thing. It wasn't a vintage performance, but a game that we controlled, and now we can look forward to Annan knowing a point would be enough to secure a place in the last 16 of the Cup.
It's interesting. I mean, this is my first summer where the group's really changed. There's been a big turnover in the group, because last year it was maybe 4 or 5 came in, but it didn't feel like a massive sea change. Whereas this year it feels like some big characters have left, or guys that have been here for quite some time. Chris Cadden, Carl McHugh, to name but a few. I know I'm running the risk here, but the feels that there's something about this group.
It's certainly something that I buy into at this moment in time. But you can't be optimistic at this time of the season, when can you?
It'd be very easy for me to sit here and blind you with kind of bullshit and say, no, everything's, the team are looking really good this season. No, I think it's going to be a real good year. Like, I genuinely... And this is me kind of speaking as nothing to do with Motherwell Football Club, just the guy who's around them every day, can feel the vibe, can see how people are reacting and picking things up, how they're playing so early on in what is still effectively pre-season. I feel, without cursing it, it feels like we're in the start of something again. It just feels like there's a real potential there, and I don't know what that potential is. The potential might be obviously in the division, which is a success. Ultimately for this club, and we all want so much more, but it just feels like there's an energy and a usefulness and pace to burn down the flanks in particular about this group, that I just hope that maybe this is the year, and I certainly think there's signs there that this is the year that something special might happen, maybe.
Yeah, we certainly look like we're going to be exciting, that's for sure. The talking points of this week, it's been the departure of Chris Cadden, although the departure was confirmed, there wasn't pen put to paper in a new deal. Firstly, Chris Cadden, here from the age of 9, a fantastic servant to the football club, broke through the youth academy, kind of fulfilled a supporter's dream of, of getting into the first team, playing regularly. Now the issue is for the club, trying to get the compensation they deserve for Chris Cadden. I'm sure you would echo the sentiment that, that Chris Cadden is fantastic for Motherwell Football Club, and we wish him all the best going forward. The compensation issue is complex, to say the least. I heard Alan Burrows talking about it on the radio on Tuesday night. Did I understand it all? I'm not 100% sure I did, but will the work continue to get the money where
due? There's only so much I can say about it, because it's not my, it's Alan Burrows' side of things. I know he spoke on the BBC during the week and gave a good explanation of it. All I can say for that is, look, we feel, well, we are entitled to compensation for developing young players, and I don't mean to make that sound like a cattle market. It's just that's what it is. If you develop a young player over a period of time, then under FIFA rules you are entitled to a certain amount of money. The grey area comes in with America only recently adopting the training compensation regulations and what it actually means and where they fit into it. So what I'll say is the club will of course exhaust every avenue to see what level of compensation they can get for Chris, and we'll see how that plays out, and we'll try and be as open and transparent along the way as we possibly can be. But at this stage it's discussions ongoing, and we'll see what comes to pass, and we'll keep everyone informed as much as we possibly can. But that's really at the moment. I realise how cagey I'm sounding. But you know, it is one of those things where it's like it's the kind of vacancy of the system, and it's kind of left up, because I think if he was just moving to any club outside of America on a permanent basis,
Oxford for instance,
if he was moving to an English club, then we, you know, the compensation's set in stone. But I mean, he's going to be moving to Columbus to become a Columbus player. However, it's up to them how they decide to then, you know, get him ready to be their player. But he is a Columbus Crew player, and moving to America means things are slightly different. But you know, we're still learning how that will play out, and we're getting advice, and we'll see what happens.
The move to Columbus, I suppose, is an exciting one for the media guys. Another guy to follow.
When he starts playing in 2020, we all play the MLS Fantasy League massively competitively in the office. I just like to state for the record that Alan Burrows is struggling in the second half of the season. Struggling. And I'm near the top, that's all I'm saying. I won the split into two. There's a spring and the fall league. I won the spring league. But no, Cads will be he'll go into my team. Rosie's in my team as well. A constant in my team. Whitecaps aren't doing so well at the moment, but you've got to be loyal to the guys that were loyal to you.
Oh, that's absolutely it. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure, as always, Andy. No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful new day. you had to hide away for some.